Let's go ahead here and start with case complaint number 23-12-C, Mark Anthony Rosales. Our investigator is Dr. Polakoff, who's on the line. Is Dr. Rosales on the line?
This is Cynthia. I'm on the line for Dr. Rosales. I'll go ahead and put him on, if that's okay.
Thank you so much. Is the complaint is not there? Okay.
No, I'm here.
Oh.
Richard Zhao.
Just, what's your initials, sir?
Richard Zhao, S-Z-A-L.
If you could just refer to your self with your initials.
Okay, my initials are R-J-S.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so since everyone is present, we're going to go ahead and have Dr. Polakoff give her investigator's report.
Good morning, Board. I did review the records of Dr. Anthony Rosales for case 2312C, and the complainant, RJF, had two visits with Dr. Rosales for concerns of flat foot pain. The patient had x-rays, he had arterial studies, and it was determined that a brace would help bilateral feet support him so that he doesn't have the movement of the rear foot and the flat foot. Dr. Rosales prescribed, fitted, and dispensed lower leg tie and Velcro combination ankle braces. RJS had a complaint which he saw the same or similar braces at Amazon for $21.93. versus $180, and he thinks that $180 is too much for braces that he can find on Amazon. My concerns are different. There are different qualities of braces. Amazon is a wonderful shopping adventure, which I use all the time, but I know that sometimes quality is not the same from one product to another. So I cannot compare the braces that RJS found on Amazon that seemed to be similar for $21.93. For the same similar, they are not medical grade quality. I have reviewed in concerns of fees, and I understand how money is tight, especially when you retire, and I do not want to waste the government or Medicare money if I can help it. But in a case like this, these are quality medical devices of a medical grade, medical support, and have been tested. I do not understand the type of braces that are similar for $21.93. So in this case, I did find the complaint unsubstantiated.
And Dr. Polakoff, Dr. Campbell, as well, that the patient signed the ABN forms.
That, yes, the patient did sign the form with the understanding that he understood what he was signing, and that helped me with the unsubstantiated determination.
And the fact, too, that once you dispense a DME product to a patient, it is non-returnable if they wore it because of sanitary and health reasons, correct?
You cannot reuse any product on any patient once it is out the door, such as anything in life that if someone uses in today's COVID climate, you cannot reuse.
Dr. Foreman, do you have questions?
I have no questions.
Dr. Ilano, do you have any questions for Dr. Polakoff?
I have no questions for Dr. Polakoff. Thank you.
Okay. Now I will ask our complainant, to go ahead and just make a five-minute statement. Yes.
I apologize. This is AAG Seamus Monaghan. Would you like to allow the respondent to make a brief statement and then allow the complainant and then allow the respondent to rebut if necessary.
Okay, that would be fine. So we'll then go ahead and ask for Dr. Rosales' statement.
Okay.
Dr. Rosales?
Yes, ma'am.
So if you would give a summary, please, as to the care and issue that has been brought before us.
Sure. Well, I saw the patient, initially in the office. He had complaints about his feet, being painful. We assessed him. I gave him an evaluation. I laid out an extensive plan for him, including nothing at all, conservative treatment with lace-up braces, with AFO-type braces, with prefabricated AFOs, with surgery, with different types of shoe gear, and that's what he elected to proceed with. I told him that we could start with that. That would be the least invasive, and then if it didn't help, then we could kind of tier our treatment protocol until he got better. I saw him the second time, kind of the same thing. The first visit, I dispensed braces. He agreed to them. I told him we could try them. He signed an ABN, which we do for, all patients for treatment. Again, I saw him, the second time and kind of reiterated what we went over. He didn't want to have any injections. He didn't want to proceed with orthotics or AFOs or surgery. So I kind of concluded the visit. And he was upset that that the braces didn't work, but I never guaranteed that they would work. It's just something to try. He has a pretty severe flat foot on both sides. Sometimes the braces do help, and patients find that they alleviate the symptoms enough where they can still function and they don't have to have any other intervention. So that's why I decided to use that treatment for, initially when he came in. That's all I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Zoss, have you ever had the opportunity to examine any of these braces that people purchase on Amazon? I'm sure you've had people get them or other devices and they bring them into the office to ask your opinion.
Yes, I have.
And what do you find?
Most of the time they just don't have the quality that the ones that we can purchase from a medical manufacturer. So, I mean, there's so much stuff out there. It's really difficult to assess, but I see it almost every day. People say, I brought in these inserts, or I have this brace, or I have this sleeve, or, and that, it's just not, if it fixed everybody, then they wouldn't be in the office, right. We try to use the best products that we can. We try to vet all the vendors that we use and just use the best medical products or devices that we can in the office for the benefit of the patient. I certainly don't want to prescribe or give or recommend anything that's subpar, not for my patients, not for myself, not for anybody that I know. So.
And would you be of the opinion that, wearing a device once and saying it doesn't work really doesn't give the device a chance? There may have been something that, was causing an irritation or something along that line?
I'm not quite understanding.
Well, the complaint said he wore it once and it didn't help. So, when you start with a new thing, it's like, you put an orthotic,
Yes, there certainly is a breaking in process. And typically we ask patients to, wear them for 4 to 6 hours a day if they're having discomfort with it, and do that for 7 to 10 days or so to break the device in before wearing it all day long. And I'm sure we reviewed shoe gear, and I tell them that a lot of times you'll get more support if you wear a high-top tennis shoe or a lightweight hiking boot that extends above the ankle, because that'll give you additional support. It is more cumbersome, and I understand that, and it takes a little bit more time to put them on and you have to wear a good sock underneath the brace, and you know, there's some there's a trial period with anything new that we're putting on our body. So I usually go through that, and one day is no, that's not enough.
And my last comment or question is the fact that, you know, you start out basic with something like this, and you know, working your way up to something like maybe, you know, with the severe collapse of the medial arch, the option of a Ritchie brace somewhere down the line. And again, you know, the cost of those, I don't know what they're up to, $1,200 maybe.
Yes.
Okay.
That's usually what we bill out. So you know, and I mean, I could have catheted them on the first visit and sent them a bill for $2,400, but I know that, certainly I try not to operate like that. I try to visit with a patient, give them some options, try some less expensive, treatment forms before, you know, getting them an AFO or a brace, because, you know, frankly, they don't work for everybody either. I wish they did.
Yeah.
If they did, I would have no problem going straight to that measure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I have some of those things that, you know, patients weren't able to wear. We have problems fitting them, you know. I mean, if you've been in practice, which I'm sure you have, it's one of those things. They work great for some people, and they don't work at all for others, so.
Thank you. Dr. Foreman?
I have no questions.
Dr. Ilana, do you have any questions for Dr. Rosales?
No. I like your approach, Dr. Rosales, in starting conservatively and working your way up. I feel that you did the right thing.
Thank you. All right. If nobody has any other questions, now we'll hear from our complainant, RJS. If you can give us a summary of your complaint.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to express my appreciation to the board for taking up this matter. As this concerns billing questions with Dr. Rosales and not the quality of the ankle support, I'd like to point out that I never refused to pay the bill to him. I simply asked him for an explanation of what I felt were unreasonable charges. I'm not in the habit of contesting or refusing to pay bills. My current credit rating is exceptional on all three credit bureaus. I don't want to summarize what I presented to you in the complaint I filed with the board. Let me just say that after two visits with Dr. Rosales, my insurance and I paid him $366.70. I assumed this had liquidated my bill with him. A few months later, I received a bill from Dr. Rosales for charges related to the ankle support boots he had given me for $180 each. Now, let me point out that when he first gave me the boots, I asked Dr. Rosales if this would be covered by my insurance. He said no, they wouldn't. Yet, he still submitted a claim to my insurance company. Then I got the bill for $180. And I had asked him in the office, if it's not covered by my insurance, what is the cost of these? He told me, they'd be substantially less than $100. Then I get a bill for $180, so I asked for an explanation. The first letter, I'd like to say that one thing. I thought there was an error in this billing. AMA statistics indicate that approximately 80% of medical bills include some type of error. So I asked in my first letter if he could just clarify for me why the cost was $180 each, when in fact he had told me it would be substantially less than $100. I never received an answer to that. I then received the same bill from Dr. Rosales a couple months later. I sent a second letter thinking that perhaps my first letter had been lost in the shuffle of papers in his office. Again, I did not receive a response, and a third bill was sent to me sometime later, adding a penalty for not having paid the bill. I sent a third letter to Dr. Rosales, once again requesting a response. After not getting a response, I decided I was intentionally being ignored and that I had no option other than to file the complaint with the board. My issue here is not with the quality of these boots. My issue here is with Dr. Rosales' treatment of me. Once Dr. Rosales learned I had filed this complaint with the board, he sent an attorney after me. A letter from his attorney attempted to intimidate me and threaten me, and with further legal action if I did not liquidate the bill. I was told by the attorney that when I visit a doctor, I should expect the price of anything he gives me to be, quote, exponentially higher than any retail price. I don't see why this should be the case. A reasonable markup is acceptable, but I do not feel that exponentially higher prices are justified. In addition, I pointed out to Dr. Rosales that I had a somewhat deformed bone on the inside of my right ankle due to a serious break I had some years ago. I had been given to believe by Dr. Rosales that the boots could be returned if I had some problem with them. I did. On that deformed bone, by wearing them just for the one day that I wore them, it was wearing off the skin on the bone. They caused me greater pain in my feet and ankles than I had before, so I didn't use them again. Dr. Rosales then informed me that I could not return them. And when I asked him, I said, well, what am I going to do with them? Because, I'm not going to use them anymore. He said I should just turn them over to, I should just give them to Goodwill. I don't think that's the proper response. I now, finally, the attorney put in three things in his letter to me. The first of these things was that if I knew that I could buy these things cheaper on Amazon, why didn't I do that and avoid seeing Dr. Rosales altogether? Look, I didn't even know these boots existed. And second of all, I'm not in the habit of self-prescribing medications or any other kind of devices for myself. The attorney then threatened me with a court case, and I decided that I was going to liquidate this bill, but I first checked with the board to see whether or not this complaint would go through. I'm not, all of you have been talking about the quality of what he's given me. I'm not questioning that. I'm questioning the fact that I was told that they would be less than $100 each, and then I'm billed for $180 each. I asked for an explanation three times, and Dr. Rosales just ignored me. I now believe that his failure to respond to my letters to Dr. Rosales was a stalling tactic, assuming that I would eventually just give up and pay the bill, and he could turn the matter over to his attorney, or he could turn the matter over to his attorney. I've never known any other health provider, or in fact anyone else I've ever done business with, that would refuse to respond to a request for a clarification of a bill. I believe that as a healthcare professional, Dr. Rosales should treat his patients with respect and perform in a highly professional manner. I think that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you provide that letter to the board office?
The letter from his attorney?
Yes, sir.
No, I got that after I filed the complaint, so but I have it. I can give it to you if you want it. I can scan it here at home and I can send it to you.
Just a second. I'm going to make a motion to move to executive session for purposes of receiving legal advice.
Second.
Any discussion? It's moved and seconded to move into executive session. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries.
Dr. Ilano, if you can disconnect and call the executive session number. Oh, and Seamus, you as well, please. And then if everybody else could stay on this line, we'll be back.
Heather, can you please email me the executive session?
Yes, I will do that. Yes, I will do that.
Thank you.
And how about the complaint?
And one more, is RS still on the call?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we're back on record at 8:28 in general session. All right, so we've obviously the complaint has indicated that the question at hand really is the billing. So, and we do know that the ABN forms were signed by the patient or by the complainant. And his concern is that Dr. Rosales was not responsive in communication to his letters and asking for an explanation of the billing. So if my board members have any remarks or comments in discussion they'd like to make, please.
A question for Dr. Rosales. Dr. Rosales, how many times did you explain the billing to the patient?
Well, we have a billing person here in the office, and she usually takes all the bills for the office, and she, she works in my office, so it's going to sound, not true, but I think she does a very good job in explaining things to patients, and she definitely puts the patient first, and she takes it personal when insurance companies don't pay, and she tries to resubmit it and resubmit the claim, and I'm sure she did that in this case. Unfortunately, this day and age with insurance companies and, Medicare disadvantage plans, they don't pay much, and I try not to tell patients prices. We try to delineate them on the ABN for a kind of a guesstimate as to what they might cost. It's tough, so I'm sure that Kim, who does our billing, and she's not here this morning, she was running late, spoke to him on numerous occasions about the billing, and I'm sure she told him that his insurance didn't pay and he can call his insurance, which he usually does, and ask them to explain to him why they wouldn't pay, because we never know. Sometimes they pay and sometimes they don't. And as you know, that, for everything that we dispense in the office, we have to have a billing code, and most of that stuff we have to submit and we have to sign an ABN. Otherwise, it's frowned upon by Medicare and the federal government and the board. So I'm sure she had multiple conversations with them as to why they did not pay, or he had the balance that he did. Certainly I could I can implement something in the office to get all the calls for patients that have complaints with their bills, but and be a provider, it's almost unreasonable. Patients write letters. Typically, I read them. I give them back to the biller or the office manager, and have them reach out to the patient and try to explain the situation to them. Usually by that time, the patients are upset and mad, and we try not to turn over patients to collections. We try to contact them and reach out to them and let them know that they have bills that are due, and we've submitted the bills as much as we can, but we can't. This bill was out there for a long time, and we're trying to clean up our books so that we don't have these things lingering out there, hoping that insurance is going to pay, and it just doesn't happen. So,
thank you, Dr. Rosales. What's the prevailing fee on that code on L4350 for the Medicare allowance?
The prevailing code?
Yeah, well, it's L4350, but what's that? Do you know what their allowed charge is?
Medicare?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't know what their allowed charge is, and the biller is not here. I certainly can get back with you.
May I say something, Dr. Campbell?
Oh, certainly, Dr. Polo.
I did check on that, and the prevailing fee is $150.
And Dr. Polakoff, isn't it true that even if you sign an ABN form, that you still have to bill the insurance even though you know it's not a covered expense, right, to show that it has been billed?
Yes, if you don't bill the insurance, then you have no idea the patient has been hit with the entire fee of everything.
May I interject something?
Yes.
First of all, I don't know who Kim is. Kim has never spoken to me at all about this bill. I never got any type of response, either verbal or written, from Dr. Roselli's office. So what he was saying about she speaking to me several times, she never spoke to me and never gave me a response. Secondly, I did sign the ABM form, which I meant to point out before, but signing an ABM form, it says I'm responsible for the bill. But the point is, that doesn't give Dr. Rosales a blank check to send me a bill for whatever he feels like billing me, which is what I felt was happening, and I didn't know what was going on, and no one would talk to me. So that is why I actually filed his complaint. Thank you.
Sir, I have the office manager here, Cynthia, and she says that Kim spoke to you a couple of times, or at least once, I'm sure, over the phone. So, we can look inside your chart and see if it's documented. Typically, we can document there, so we can change that on our end. When we reach out to patients that have billing concerns, we can document the phone calls or the communication, which we probably should have done anyways. We're not doing this to, just send you bills erroneously, and I understand. I mean, there's a lot of patients that want explanation about their insurance, what they cover, why they cover, why don't they cover. I mean, it's a daunting task, and, I apologize for not having the time to explain this to you or putting it in a way that you were able to understand, because it's certainly not the point. And I, like most people, do not like attorneys, but, we use them when the accounts go past 90 days. And your account was, it was way past 90 days. So we gave the insurance a lot of time to reconsider and to resubmit the claim, and just didn't get paid, so we have to send it over.
Dr. Rosales, did the attorney send you copies of what was being sent to the complainant?
Is that directed to me? No,
yeah.
They typically don't. So once we submit the file over to the attorney, at the end of the month, typically we go through our accounts receivable, and anything that's past 90 days, we try to call them one last time. Usually there's about 10 or 15 of them, and then we send it over to the attorney because we've sent them multiple invoices. We try to call them, we try to text them, we try to reach out to them to get the balance paid. And unfortunately, there's a percentage of patients, that don't pay their bill for whatever reason. So that's the recourse that we take in the office.
So you give them the job, and then that's it. That's the attorney's issue, is then dealing with it, and it's out of your hands.
Okay.
It just seems, I do thank you, though, for making the statement and apology about the fact that, with the communication, because I think that's, again, I always say, so many of the things we see here at the board are because there's poor communication between all parties.
And I would just make a recommendation to document anytime anybody in the office talks to the patient that needs the documentation, just so that you have it in the chart that you did talk to someone. So if it's in there, the person leaves or is not there when you need them.
Okay, and I'm talking to Cynthia here. She's sitting next to me, the office manager, and we have changed that in the office to document all telephone calls that they go in the chart, so that we have a reference point when that happens.
Seeing this, I don't see any concerns or falling below the state statutes, so I'd like to make a motion to dismiss complaint number 2312-C.
I second it.
Thank you, Dr. Ilana. Was there any discussion on the motion that was made to dismiss the complaint number 23-12-C? No discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Motion is carried. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Does anybody, everybody's okay to keep going here? Nobody's okay. Good morning, Dr. Farahani.
How are you guys?
Okay, let me get my crazy, this crazy computer has dropped me out of my, hang on. Mr. Crawford, you want to come have a seat?
Yeah.
We're going to start with Dr. Farahani, then we'll speak with you, and Dr. McAllister is on the phone, and we have our complainant as present. So our next case here is 23-08-C, Dr. Jeffrey McAllister. And Dr. Cameron Farahani is the investigator. Morning, Dr. Farahani.
Sure, good morning, everyone. This is an investigative report for a complaint 23-08-C, licensing to Dr. Jeff McAllister, POD 000764. I am Dr. Farahani. This was done on 10-12-2023. This is the complaints information summary of allegation that tried to put it in. In this template that's possible. In November of 2020, the patient had a revision on the left foot by Dr. McAllister due to a previous surgery that was done on November 6, 2020. Dr. McAllister needed to replace hardware for a bone graft on her big toe. At her post-op appointment, an X-ray was taken and her foot looked aligned with the new hardware bone graft. She said,
excuse me, Dr. Farahani, can you speak into the mic, please? Thank you.
I am speaking into the mic.
Okay, because it's kind of coming out jumbled at my end.
Well, can you hear me now? Dr. Yolanda, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. The patient speaks that she works at a medical device rep at a hospital, and during the pandemic she was working from home. She conducted most of her meetings via Zoom and slowly started using her foot while continuing physical therapy. She saw Dr. McAllister several times in 2021 and was concerned about the stability of her foot. She also stated that she was a runner and he had released her to run. Dr. McAllister assured her that the foot was mechanically solid and the ankle strength was would come with time and physical therapy. In August of 2022, she was back at work on her feet a lot, and for the first time since the surgery. She worked at a conference for 3 days in August of 2022 and had swelling in the tarsal area of the left foot. She took photos and made an appointment with Dr. McAllister's office. He saw her in a week and recommended cortisone shot and a metatarsal pad to calm the foot down. She states that she now has x-rays from the appointment that day that show broken hardware in her foot. Dr. McAllister assured her that the foot was fine. She went back a few months later still in pain, and Dr. McAllister asked if she had any back issues. She replied no, and she was referred to orthopedic Dr. Eichler, and the doctor ordered MRI for the back, and he found a minor bulging disc, but said it was non-surgical. He suggested PT as physical therapy. She started physical therapy for a few weeks later, which put a lot of strain on the foot. And then she went back and got orthotics from Good Feet Store, which she states that were plastic and put a lot of strain on her foot. In March of 2023, she went back to Dr. McAllister to discuss pain, swelling, bruising of the foot. He suggested trying PRP to see if that would help. And he also suggested an MRI and did tell her it looked surgical. He said we needed to add a screw to support the metatarsal bone that is collapsing. Dr. Mikowski called her a week later to tell her that the MRI looked good, but surgery still is required. When she asked why she needed surgery, she states that he literally could not answer that question. So the patient decided to get a second opinion from Dr. Ryan Scott and Dr. Flynn. Both physicians were clear that the bone graft done by Dr. Mikowski was too large for a cadaver graft and should have been a graft from her own body. This is what the patient had stated in her complaint. And she also stated that both surgeons had agreed that there had been a bone infection from the cadaver bone. And she states that her foot has been compromised since 2020. And she says that she has a lifetime of pain and limitation. And she's asking that this complaint be reviewed because this surgery was not within Dr. McAllister's scope of practice. And and there was a letter that was provided by Dr. McAllister, which was in the Missy Court. I'm not going to go through because you guys have seen that. I reviewed all the records. It started November 6th of 2020, which was Dr. Lee that had performed the initial surgery, and then on 11-11, Dr. McAllister's first visit. He stated in his notes the patient is a healthy young 43-year-old female. He spoke to the primary surgeon to discuss it, that they're all on the same page, and it will lengthen the first ray back out a few millimeters. They reviewed the preoperative film with the primary surgeon, Dr. David Lee, and they were all under the impression that she would do very well with the reconstruction. They discussed that this will be a harbor removal revision fusion of the first tarsal metatarsal joint and the bone grafting as well as autograft. She should have no issues healing this since she's young and healthy and her expectations are reasonable. On 11-18, they revisited surgery. On 11-30, it was the first post-op visit from Dr. McAllister, and she went on 12-16 for post-op visit number 3, post-op visit number 4, because it was number 1-13 of 2020. And on 2-2 of 2021, the patient was there for following up her left forefoot revision. The patient was doing well, she's happy with the results. And we say that they will allow her to start weight bearing post-op her shoe and she works slowly into activities. And then they have written that they follow her 4 weeks with x-rays and left foot weight bearing. On 3/16 of 2021, which is approximately a month and a half later, they evaluate the patient weight bearing and eye weight bearing. They reviewed the radiograph. Patient is probably 90% healed on the left first tarsal and the tarsal midfoot fusion, doing well with pain control. Clinically, she's doing great. Approximately 2 months after that, she was also seen in the office. X-rays were taken, and on 8/2, she was also seen. They discussed bilateral feet, discussed radiographs of bilateral feet, discussed her left foot, midfoot, and most likely this should get better. It does linger and most likely depends on shoe gear. They dispensed the over-the-counter orthotics and they will revisit her right foot when she is ready to move forward with the right first tarsal and tarsal fusion hallux valgus correction. We'll see her back in the fall when she's ready to move forward. And that documentation, including history and physical examination, diagnosis of chronic illness, low risk morbidity. And then 9/1 of 2021, they also assessed the weight bearing. The patient had some discomfort in her left foot. which we dispensed metatarsal pad for. Today, we also recommended over-the-counter orthotics with metatarsal pad. We also did the injection to the left second intermetatarsal space with the cortisone today, and they verbally consented to the second intermetatarsal space injection. And then on 4/17, they assessed the patient's weight bearing, night weight bearing. The patient had a previous left second intermetatarsal space injection, which she states significantly reduced her pain for a few months, but her pain had returned. She stated that she had a lot of pain and swelling, particularly at the end of the day after being on her feet. And she had stated that her right foot was not bothering her at this time. And she had tried metatarsal pad, over-the-counter insoles, but she did have continued pain to the left foot between the first and the second digit, and see that her great toe has been popping and hurting as well. And the patient stated in the notes that the patient had likely had some inflammation of the ligament in the left foot. She's been using her foot a lot more in the past 8 months or so, and she feels that the pain has been increased since then. The patient had done an MRI with Dr. Eichler, which has a bulging disc. At that visit on 4/17 of 2023, they consented for a left second intermetatarsal space injection for a painful neuroma or neuroma type symptoms. The patient has tried and failed physician-guided conservative treatments such as proper shoe gear, orthotics, etc., etc., and they ordered an MRI of the left foot to assess the ligament and soft tissue in the area to rule out possible stress fracture. And at that visit, they noted that they would follow up her MRI result. On 4/26 of 2023, they assessed the patient. She was 9 days post injection of the second intermetatarsal space. She had only gotten 10% relief, and her pain is still restricting her. They discussed in depth conservative versus surgical treatment, they talked about the detailed surgical discussion at that visit on 4/26 of 2023. Left distal second and third metatarsal related procedures, the risks and benefits were discussed. And plan of care included interventional and referral to address this patient's pain. And then at the request of the patient, she went and got two second opinions. One was from Dr. Ryan Scott, which we ordered records from through Heather Rogers. Dr. Ryan Scott reported that he had a long discussion today with us in management of her short first rate, non-union with broken hardware, and her underlying metatarsalgia to the second to third metatarsal. And after Scott reiterated the idea for several options, including shortening osteotomy with the two and third metacarsal revision of the first carsal metacarsal fusion with a calcaneal autograft, which is structural, and metal edge to restore length versus MTP fusion to elongate the medial column. Dr. Scott explained to her that the calcaneal autograft made more sense. However, there's still a chance that the same outcome may prevail. And he further explained to her that there will be significant time off the foot and ankle, and she did understand. And then when looking at Dr. Flynn's notes, Dr. Flynn suggested injection with autoshoe, contribution, oral prescription, and also discussed surgical intervention, but with the iliac harvest. I reviewed, these are my conclusion. I reviewed the entire medical records. I have a difficult time wrapping my head around as to what I feel wrongdoing encountered by Dr. McAllister in relation to the patient. I did have several questions. Is that when reviewing this case in its entirety, that is, this patient was 6 days post-op that was performed by another surgeon, Dr. Lee, and then she went for a second opinion 6 days after her procedure to Dr. McAllister's office. In reviewing the records, it was noted that the patient experienced from the notes that the patient had experienced a traumatic event, and that's why it led for Dr. Lee to perform the surgery. In review of the initial procedure performed by Dr. Lee, the lapis itself showed correct alignment, and the hardware was flush without any compromise. However, the biggest issue noted is the shortening of the metatarsal length post-procedure work. So this is when I reviewed the x-rays immediately post-op from Dr. Lee. I did notice that there's significant shortening of the first metatarsal. The patient received an opinion from Dr. McAllister, and Dr. McAllister followed standard of care and followed this patient by providing guidance and surgical procedures seemed to be correct alignment. However, obviously we're all human, and I'm saddened to hear that these complications did happen to our patient. But one thing that we do have to realize is that surgery is not an exact science, and complications do occur from time to time, and that is beyond control of the patient and the surgeon. And what's unsettling to me with regard to this complaint is that the patient did make remarks that the procedure that was performed by Dr. McAllister was not within his scope, and yet the patient went to Dr. Scott and Dr. Flynn, who are both podiatrists as well. So I think the scope of practice applies to all podiatric surgeons, and it does not differ or exclude one from the other. She stated that she decided to get a second opinion from Dr. Ryan Scott and Dr. Flynn, and both physicians were clear that the bone graft done by Dr. McAllister was too large for the cadaver graft, and should have a graft from her own body. And both surgeons also agreed that there may be bone infection from the cadaver bone. However, I would be subpoenaed Dr. Flynn and Dr. Scott's notes. I had no statement written by either physicians of these that were unfortunately written in the complaint. Again, lastly, I'm still very saddened. When I do treat patients myself, when complications happen, it's not a perfect day for anybody, and it does make people sad that you get complications. But I think that this standard care was followed. And on the last note, I did see some lapse of care, and the patient had not seen anybody from September of 2021 to April of 2022. So with those things in mind, I find those allegations unsubstantiated. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Farhani, for that complete report. I do have some questions, though.
Sure.
You know, you're talking about Dr. Lee does the surgery on 11-6, and that metatarsal was way too short. That, you know, and my question to you, too, is that the patient, the complainant, said she had a motor vehicle accident. When was that motor vehicle accident? Because I believe that the document said that she got her foot caught between the pedals. Lisfranc's injury. Did somebody miss a Lisfranc's injury? Because when I'm looking at the CT that was ordered by Dr. Flynn on 5/29 of 23, the radiologist says chronic Lisfranc's injury. I think something was missed, honestly.
So as somebody who, as you guys know, as somebody who does a lot of personal injury stuff, this is often the case. And looking at Dr. Lee's x-rays post-op, I mean, I had never seen the patient. I mean, obviously, it's the first time I see her. And when you look at the foot, it's the first thing you realize. But that was way too short.
So, oh, yeah.
And, you know, That's just my opinion. And I definitely think by looking at the CT, that's another thing that, I mean, maybe it wasn't a list strain, maybe it was an old injury, I don't really know.
Yeah.
But knowing patients, 90% of the patients who do have motor vehicle accidents, they do have some sort of an injury, plantar plate tears, they have posterior tibial tendon dysfunction, peroneal, not complete tears. So a lot of them have deltoid tears, believe it or not. So which can be, all these can come. I don't know whether, I can't speak on behalf of Dr. Lee or anybody who ordered this. I know that the patient endured all this stuff, and then Dr. McAllister got involved. But you know, I think the problem was prior to Dr. McAllister. I don't think McAllister per se was the problem. I think the previous was the problem.
I agree. Another question I had too. You know, it doesn't say, I mean, in the operative report of Dr. McAllister, this is what he states. Patient needed iliac crest allograft with bone graft major and bone marrow aspiration to assist with the fusion and length of the first medial column. Next, our iliac crest was fashioned on the back table, and we then prepared the hardware removal for the first metatarsal joint, tarsometatarsal joint. So, to me, he's saying I took a graft from the iliac crest. Well, that's out of the scope. We can't do that. That has to be done by an MD or a DO. There's nothing in this report that tells me there's a cadaver bone that was used, and if that's what he fashioned an iliac crest graft with. So that's a big question to me, too, because, like I said, I didn't see anywhere in this document that said there was a cadaver graft used. And then Dr. Flynn and Dr.
Scott,
you know, and they recommended, you know, a true iliac crest, and the name of the MD or DO
and
that was going to do that procedure in a separate.
Just in the defense of Dr. Scott, Dr. Flynn,
Dr.
McAllister, these guys, all three of them are fellowship trained, and they all work for a core institute. So if I wouldn't put it, and McAllister can, with his attorney,
right.
I don't know. But it's very unlikely that if the iliac crest was done, because they always have orthopedic surgeons available. So I just know because they work for a core, all three of them.
Yeah.
That's just my thing, and I guess I do sometimes miss things, and I'm human as well, but, you know, I'll leave it to you guys.
Yeah, well, like, you know, when it's not documented in there, you're kind of wondering what's going on, because I know, you know, it becomes a gray issue because people think, well, I'm taking something from an area out of my scope, but I'm using it to treat a problem in the foot. Well, you know, that's really gray, and I know a lot of people were trained in that. Fellowship people were probably trained, but that's still kind of an area that's real questionable to me. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, when was the last x-ray Dr. McAllister took? The left foot, not the right foot.
The last one that was taken was on 4/17.
What year?
2023.
That was the left foot?
Yes.
So I think you reviewed it on the left foot.
You did one on 9/1/2021. Yeah, that's what I saw with that.
My last x-ray was on 8/2/2021.
Thank you.
Okay, because could hardware break from 2021 to 23?
Sure. I've seen hardware break 5 years after.
And Dr. Lee did a neuroma excision also in the surgery, right?
So here's the thing. my mind never really even, I should have, but I never really even, I, we subpoenaed Dr. Flynn's records and Dr. Scott's records, but after I got into this whole documents, then I realized that the main factor was Dr. Lee, and that's by that time it was already too late. So if anyone should have subpoenaed anybody, it would have been Dr. Lee.
That's all I have.
Dr. Ilano, do you have questions for Dr. Farhani?
No, I don't have questions for Dr. Farhani. He's good. He did a good job.
Thanks.
So then, when was it? Okay, so then on 5/11 of 21, Dr. Farhani, that would have been when the pseudoarthroses and was developing, correct?
Correct. Okay.
And there was no, I didn't see anything documented that said there was any kind of trauma, a post-traumatic event?
No trauma. The only trauma that I just happened to brush through was actually reading through Dr. Scott's, which I then had to backtrack to realize that our patient had a traumatic event. So to be honest with you, if you're talking about documentation sakes, nothing was ever listed. You know, as to motor vehicle or any of that stuff. So, and again, it's probably my thing. I should have probably requested the subpoena records from Dr. Lee to begin with. So,
I think that would have been, yeah, I totally agree with that.
I think that would have answered many questions.
Yeah, because, okay, so Dr. Farhani, without that information, do you think that that's going to change your opinion?
No, I really don't think. I honestly think that McAllister got stuck in the middle of something. If the dear patient would have come to me and I knew that that was the case, and I did tell McAllister, I would have said, I'm sorry, I do not take post-ops from any doctor unless they're 1 year old. Because maybe he wanted to help. I don't know. I've only seen McAllister sort of 3 times in my life. But maybe he wanted to help. But he caught himself in something that he should have never done.
Right. Well, because you know how, you know because of what you know with the accidents and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I always have patients come to me and they were unhappy with the previous surgery
sure.
for whatever reason is. And I look at them and say, you know, I do want to help however I can. But in this particular instance, complications happen after complications. The patients become upset, and so it just trickles down, and nobody really wins. The patient is unhappy. The patients have to live with this. The doctor's worried about his livelihood. It's a whole mess.
Right, and you know, I think too. I mean, this young woman didn't have any kind of metabolic disorders.
No.
She's not a smoker. It's not, you know, she was a healthy person, and
yes.
That's what makes it even more,
that
like you said, sad. You hate to see
sadness.
See that things take a bad turn like they do because they snowball. We all,
yes.
You know.
And but I also have to say, I say this to you, Dr. Campbell, and everybody else. I don't really think any doctor wakes up any particular morning going to the office saying, I plan on hurting a patient today.
No, you're
it
no.
Just doesn't happen.
Not unless they're a psychopath.
So,
yeah, exactly. Dr. Ilano, or I'll give my colleagues another, do you have anything else after?
No, right.
And Dr. Ilano?
I saw that Dr. McAllister saw and diagnosed the problem, and he did reasonable measures to try to achieve it. And unfortunately, surgeries don't often turn out the way they should. You know, that's all.
Okay. So I'm just gonna, you know. So do you think that if time would have been given with the patient from her original surgery to see how she actually responded to that would have been the way to go?
Yeah, I think rushing into another thing that was not. I have
there
a lot of respect for my colleagues, but
yeah,
you just don't. go from the 6th and then the 11th to try to...
Yes.
I would give it a year. Or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Dr. Campbell, that first ray was short.
Oh, I know. What you look at.
Even looking at that, I'm a very vertically challenged person myself, and my foot is small. Even for a small size foot, that first ray was short. It did much. Now, whether through traumatic event or whether through surgical event, I don't know. But that was, I don't think it would have changed a whole. I think she would have developed a lot of pain.
She would have had, yeah, metatarsalgia.
Yeah. She would have had a lot of issues with the MPJ and capsulitis and all that stuff, just because most of the,
yeah, her stress.
Most of the weight would bear on the lateral aspect of the forefoot.
Right.
And this toe would just...
And an orthotic may have helped and may not have, but I think...
But she's a young woman.
Yes, she's a young woman.
She's
too.
A young woman. She's in the medical field, and she wants to dress with good shoes, I assume. So, you know, you have to look at it on both sides.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors.
Yeah.
You got that right, yes. All right, so should we... Mr. Crawford, do you have any comments you'd like to make before Dr. McAllister speaks?
Sure, just a few. So I just want to make sure that we have provided the board with Dr. McAllister's records, x-rays with dates. Someone requested that.
That was me. Yes, we got them.
We've given a response. We've given a supplemental response. I don't know if the board has obtained the surgical facility records, but those are going to tell you, they're going to have reference to, for example, the bone graft in those records. So, and Dr. McAllister can explain his description. But, you know, the original complaint here is that Dr. McAllister did something outside the scope of his practice, which is clearly not correct. He's a very well-trained, fellowship-trained foot and ankle reconstructive surgeon. She came to him, agreed, shortly after surgery, but what he was presented with, in his opinion, and in her opinion, and I believe he talked to Dr. Lee, you can ask him, everybody was clear, this needs to be corrected. So, you know, the surgery was done correctly. The comment about, you know, the patient's own bone versus a cadaver graft, there's lots of literature to support using the graft that Dr. McAllister did. The surgery was done correctly. The patient did well, post-op, and the last x-rays that Dr. McAllister did of this foot showed a pseudoarthrosis, that it was stable, and then sometime after that, that plate broke, because we have subsequent x-rays that basically show that, and that happens. I mean, that is one of the potential complications whenever you're using hardware. So, I think, and I'm not commenting at all or disparaging what the patient has said, so I don't want to take it that way, but sometimes people misunderstand what doctors say, and I can see subsequently a physician potentially saying, when you have a non-union and a broken plate, well, the first attempt was with this type of graft, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to try a different type of graft, but you need to know the same thing could happen. So that could be a bit of a misinterpretation. I'm not disparaging the patient in any way. But that may have been what the discussion was. So, you know, Dr. Farahani did a good review of the records. I think he's correct that the standard of care was followed. It's always unfortunate when patients develop complications from foot and ankle surgery. It happens. And hopefully she has had some good follow-up subsequent treatment. In terms of your more specific questions, Dr. McAllister's on the phone. He can better respond specifically to those questions than I can.
Dr. McAllister, if you'd like to give a summary and make remarks or... answer any of the questions that we've been talking about here a little bit, and if we have other questions, then we can discuss those as well.
Sure, thanks for having me. So when I initially, let's start from the beginning of the textbook here. So when I initially saw her was from a referral from a friend out of state that was, I think, friends with her friend, and it was kind of a peer-to-peer kind of referral. And when I saw her, I noted the shortening of the first metatarsal and said, you know what, this isn't going to get better on its own, even with orthotics. The first metatarsal is still going to be short. My interpretation of this is that, you know, for an initial healthy patient, that an allograft available in any hospital or surgery center in the valley, iliac crest is substantiated. We also utilized her own bone from the calcaneus to help augment the osteoconductive potential of the healing process. So BMA and bone graft were used from her heel in a cancellous manner. We did not take a large chunk from her calcaneus. but there are often times where the structural capabilities of the iliac crest autograft can be utilized to help lengthen from a cortical standpoint the first metatarsal and substantiate it with cancellous bone graft for osteoconductivity. Good stable fixation and alignment of her great toe. Clinically, she did great. Post-operatively, the normal kind of post-operative woes of, you know, numbness, tingling, and swelling that eventually went down. Mostly, she still had some residual numbness and tingling around the toe, but she was a very good patient post-operatively and followed the course to the T, even beyond. I think we got her a bone stimulator as well. She was taking her vitamin D and being good about and diligent about not rushing back to work and following all the rules that she should and most patients do. And then I felt like I followed up with her for a significant amount of time. I mean, surgery was 11/18/2020, and we followed her until, you know, 8/2/2021 with our final x-ray of that foot. I related that this is still going to take some time, and I, just like Dr. Farahani said, you know, waiting a year to, like, fully discuss talking about revising it, and with iliac crest, I didn't feel like her discomfort in that area was high enough to even substantiate that. She started to have more discomfort in her forefoot, which is where I kind of turned my focus towards the tail end of the visit, where she was having metatarsalgia sub 2, sub 3. That's when we did the injection. That's when we talked about the metatarsal pads and the orthotics and the shoes. And, you know, even on 5/11/2021, she's doing full activity and at that point happy with her results. And then, you know, again, my last x-rays were 8/2/2021, and the visit subsequently probably should have taken some more x-rays and stuff, but I decided to get an MRI and assess the plantar plate, which is what I was thinking it was. I was thinking that she still had kind of offloading pain onto her lesser metatarsal head, and so that's why we did the injection and the metatarsal pads. And so my focus was on that, and we ordered the MRI, which didn't show much, which is fair. So then I said, you know what, it's not an aroma. The plantar plate looks fine. It must just be transfer metatarsalgia, and we talked about shifting the metatarsal head back. And that was it. In reference to the iliac crest, like Mr. Crawford said, there is multiple sets of literature that support allograft use. We did not use autograft. That is not within my scope of practice, I understand. And I can get you the hospital records, or Mr. Crawford can, happily, to show you that we did use, allograft. But substantiating it with or utilizing cancellous bone graft as well as BMA to help supplement the osteoconductivity, I felt was substantiated in a healthy person. And then I like to use iliac crest autograft or that type of surgery for revisions. Revisions where the patient is unhealthy. The patient has undergone several surgeries, not just the surgery 2 weeks ago. I felt like she probably had good bleeding bone surfaces at that point. I mean, no fusion had taken place, obviously. And so that's why I felt allograft was a good structural option to help lengthen her first metatarsal and first ray. And I do believe that's within my scope of practice. Been doing it for years.
Dr. McAllister, did you see any evidence that you thought could have been a previously missed list Frank's injury?
I kind of went back and as you guys were talking about that. So when I talked to, my plain answer is, I didn't think that it would benefit her to, okay, so my plain answer is no, I didn't initially see that. My supplicant answer is my main priority was the length of the first metatarsal and getting that out back out to length. I didn't think that the chronic Liz Frank injury would help her case in this scenario. And even when I spoke to Dr. Lee, of course it was a couple years ago, but I don't remember him alluding to that. And I feel like I'm a pretty good record keeper. I don't remember her saying anything about the motor vehicle accident, but I could have misheard or misdocumented that part of it, but I don't think it would have made a difference with this elective type of procedure.
I have no questions.
Dr. Yolanda, do you have any questions for Dr. McAllister?
No questions for Dr. McAllister.
Okay. Oh, Dr. McAllister, do you teach residents?
I have a fellowship and I teach VA residents, yep.
Oh, okay. So did you have residents on your case with you?
No one was there, actually. Not that I remember.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. Now we're going to have hear from the complainant, T.S. And you're more than, yes, please. Take your time.
Good morning. My name is Tiffany Seven. I'm 46 years old. I'm a single mother of two children. Up until this surgery, I was a runner my entire life. I'm a medical rep. I'm a medical device sales representative and responsible for sales and implementation of medical devices in hospitals, as well as training and educating for anyone who works with my products. This requires a lot of hours on my feet throughout many different areas of the hospital as part of my job description. In November of 2020, I had a revision on my left foot by Dr. McAllister. I was working from home due to the pandemic. As I transitioned back into the field for work, I started to have increased pain and instability in my left foot. I saw Dr. McAllister several times, and he assured me that the foot was structurally sound. He reassured me that the graft had taken and that stability would come. He encouraged me to run and practice wearing high heels to improve my ankle stability. He sent me to an orthopedic surgeon to have my back checked as a cause for the pain that I was experiencing. In early 2023, the pain was severe and I went to see Dr. McAllister again. And at that appointment, he suggested an MRI. After the MRI was done, before I had the results, I sought out a second opinion from the Core Institute with Dr. Scott, as well as Dr. Flynn. The Core Institute physician decided to x-ray my foot before we discussed my concerns. When they showed me the x-ray, I was devastated. I could see that the hardware had scattered all over my foot. Even the plate was broken in half. The physician explained to me that the graft had infused, causing the hardware to move throughout the foot. Dr. McAllister called me a few days after that MRI on May 1st and was completely dishonest about the results. I do have an audio recording of that that I did provide to the board of us going over the results of the MRI. I haven't walked since June, and I've had more pain physically and mentally than I can describe. Unfortunately, 3 years later, I'm still in pain with an undetermined outcome on my foot and my life. I've had the mini rail on my foot since September 13th, as well as a PICC line, where I receive daily antibiotics. And partial amputation is still a very real outcome at this point. Between deductibles and insurance, the cost of the surgeries have been astronomical. Dr. McAllister and his dishonesty was as disappointing as this unsuccessful surgery. I'm asking the medical board to review this case because this has been horrifyingly life-changing for me. And I believe that I deserve better care and, more importantly, honesty from my surgeon. Two other things that I want to note is that Dr. Flynn and Dr. Scott never told me that there was a bone infection, but they said that that was a possibility. There was not a bone infection, but that was just something that was initially discussed with me that could have been a potential issue. I never heard that there was a Liz Brink injury until I went to the Core Institute. Dr. Scott was the first physician to discuss that with me. Dr. Flynn was the second. I did disclose to both Dr. Lee and Dr. McAllister that there was an automotive accident that, was what I thought caused the injury to begin with. But I think the thing that is most troubling to me is that Dr. McAllister was not honest. That audio recording, he tells me that my MRI was great, and the other two, Dr. Scott and Dr. Flynn, disagreed with that. They said that there was significant ligament damage and that the cause for the hardware to break and move throughout the foot was because the graft had never fused. And then when that graft crumbled, that's when I started to have significant pain. I think that's really all I have to say, is that this has been life-changing. And I feel like if Dr. McAllister had been honest with me as I went in and complained about pain and done x-rays and caught the fact that that graft hadn't taken, there would have been less damage to the foot. The more that hardware moved throughout my foot, the more damage there was. And now I'm going into surgery number 5.
So, who did Dr. Flynn do your rail?
He did.
Okay.
So, in June, I went in and we did the revision, and he removed the hardware from Dr. McAllister's surgery. And that surgery was, by all respects, successful. I was able to go into a walking boot and was in physical therapy. Unfortunately, I started to feel ill, and there was a staph infection, and I'm septic. So the hardware all had to be removed, and the only option was to clean out that wound, pack it with Vanco, and put on the mini rail because he wasn't able to put new hardware inside the foot, and we needed something to hold the graft from the iliac crest in place until hopefully we have some, I guess, calcification in that bone. So that's where we're at now. The bone is still not completely fused, and that's why there is still concern for partial amputation.
What was your motor vehicle accident?
It was in 2020. I want to say, I'm guessing, but March of 2020.
Are you having any signs of chronic pain syndrome, RSD?
In the foot?
Yeah.
After the accident?
No, with all the surgeries you've had.
I've had pain since 2020.
But nobody diagnosed a chronic pain syndrome?
No.
Are you able to work at all?
I can work limitedly from home, but that is going to end at some point because I can't perform my job duties.
Yeah. Is there a disability?
I could quit my job, but I don't know that. I don't know if that's the best choice for me both financially and because the medical bills are, just since September, we've exceeded $500,000, so I need my health insurance.
Right.
I don't know what the concern is, but as long as I'm able to stay employed, I need to.
Yeah. And you said, when did the mini go on?
The mini rail went on September 13th.
Of this year. So you just... Are they doing any PT on you now?
They are. We're at that catch 22 because I can't be full weight bearing, but we need to kind of stimulate the foot now because we've had the mini rail in there for a little while. So now what I'm doing is my PT consists of I walk with the walker or with a set of crutches, and I just put pressure on the heel so that we're not affecting the mini rail, and then the hope is if we see some progression, then we would remove the lower part of the mini rail, keep the top part on, and then if all goes well from there, hopefully remove that mini rail and put me into a walking boot and do, PT from there for, he said, up to 6 months, and we'll kind of just age it as we go. So we're kind of in a holding pattern until we know how if this bone repairs itself.
Yeah. Do they have you on supplementation, vitamin D?
Yes. Okay. 100 grams of protein a day, vitamin D. We do labs weekly. I have a home health nurse that comes out and changes
does your pick.
Does my pick. And we've moved from I was on Mako and penicillin, and now we've downgraded the antibiotics to daptomycin.
Oh, okay. I just had a meeting about daptomycin yesterday. It's supposed to be very effective. No, that was, did you say you had MRSA?
I had a thought. I found it was a staph.
Oh, it's a staph. Okay.
I'm looking for, that's Dr. Ilano.
Dr. Ilano, do you have questions for the complainant?
No questions. I'm very sympathetic of what how her recovery has gone through. But no questions for her. Thank you.
So I looked at the MRI from Dr. McAllister. Was there another MRI done?
No.
Okay.
So the other two second opinions I got from Dr. Scott and from Dr. Flynn, they pulled up the MRI that Dr. McAllister ordered and learned about.
Okay.
And they both also did independent x-rays.
Okay. Yeah, the x-ray is pretty clear. So.
Yeah.
And Dr. Flynn did, they did a CT.
Yeah,
too.
I saw that.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Okay.
Yeah. And they did end up doing, Dr. Flynn did do, he took a 33 millimeter graft from the iliac crest for the surgery in June. So.
But it was another physician did that grafting for you.
Correct.
So before you even had the surgery, what was your main complaint?
I had just pain in the left foot, and I went in to see Dr. Lee, and he did an x-ray and said that I needed a revision, that there, could have been a problem from, a previous injury that I didn't know about. That's his recommendation.
Is Dr. Lee in Arizona?
Yes.
He's a podiatrist?
Yes.
And prior to that, you didn't have, being a runner, had you had other injuries or things?
No.
Have you ever had other,
Did you ever have other bone surgeries or surgeries that you had difficulty healing from?
No. Actually, I was born about a hip on the right side. I had a bone graft in 1978, and that healed, luckily, miraculously. So I am a fast healer. I'm kind of hoping that would be my advantage.
You know, I do appreciate all the good discussions and just things here. These kind of cases that just go south are heartbreaking, and it just makes us, you know, it's like you're stuck here, and what do you do? And I, you know, and since we aren't there with the patients and hearing the discussions with doctors, but we hear the concerns about people feeling that they aren't listened to.
Sorry.
And this is, you know, when we know that there are these kind of complications that can occur, it's tough here, you know. We don't like seeing people that have on their fifth surgery, because as Dr. Farahani says, and we all know that there, you know, it's no one's fault that things happen, and it just, I, you know, you get to the I don't know what else to say.
I don't see any, you know, state statutes that were vulnerability statute of care.
Yeah, because that's why I was wanting to know about the, you know, when you had mentioned about being outside the scope of practice, and that the red flag that came to me was when there was discussion of the Iliac Crest, and that then we learned that this was a cadaver. It was in a allograft, not an autograft. So, and you know, the companies that have those, I mean, they do all kinds of testing and procedures to remove any possibility of infection coming from that kind of graft.
Correct.
So, you know, that fact that how did this all, you know, turn about? But I do agree that there's no violation of the state statute. Doctor came in a procedure that had been done prior, where I think that's where this all started. But I do like to be sure that physicians understand, again, how important communication is to people. To communicating when a patient says they're in pain and you know, or don't brush it off. There's something going on. I always told students, you know, the patient's going to tell you what you need to know. You need to listen.
I think that if I can say one more thing, I think that my concern is that if we had addressed this sooner, if, you know, if when I went in to see Dr. McAllister, were there x-rays done that showed that that hardware had broken or that graft hadn't taken? The other two surgeons seemed to think that the graft had never fused. That's my concern, is that could we have addressed this 2 years sooner or a year and a half sooner, and would that have created less damage to my foot if we had done that surgery sooner? I mean, if you look at that x-ray, I'm an untrained eye, and I can see that there's a broken plate and screws through the joint in my foot, and I was walking on that and working on that all day long. So what happened in that period of time in my foot that could have potentially made it worse? And if Dr. McAllister had addressed that with me sooner, it would have given me better options as a patient to, you know, get another opinion or to do a revision sooner.
Okay, yeah, because that CT that was done by Dr. Flynn is only showing a 40% bone fusion. But I know on the other MRIs it was showing fusion.
Yeah, so
it's like, and you had no trauma.
like I said, I think it's, you know, it's...
Can I say something?
Yes, Dr. McAllister.
Sorry. So, I appreciate Tiffany sharing her story. I really do. When I looked at the MRI that I had ordered it for the foot because, as we all know, for some reason, Big Brother divides the foot up into two sections in the MRI world, the CT world. So I ordered the MRI of the foot to assess her forefoot, like, discomfort in her second and third MCPs. And from my interpretation of the results, they didn't, like, there was too much artifact to assess the fusion potential. And so I take it upon myself where maybe I could have had her in to review with an x-ray, and there's no doubt in my mind that if I saw broken hardware 2-3 years out from surgery, I do this type of revision on other stuff all the time, I would with no doubt say, hey, we need to revise this, we need to do it, but I didn't. So, you know, that MRI didn't go through, like, and say anything about a non-union, and it was there because there was too much artifact. And I was chasing a plantar plate injury and the MCP synovitis and everything else, which is why I ordered an MRI, not CT. So that was my train of thought, and I just wanted to let you guys know that.
Dr. Yolanda, what are your thoughts on this case?
It's a very unfortunate case. Dr. McAllister dealt what he felt was appropriate, and things happen. Unfortunately, things don't turn out the way it should, and it's just unfortunate for everybody here. And I don't think anyone's at fault.
Unfortunate, but I mean,
I know,
the pain
yes.
wasn't right over the joint because that would have been
out of all the cases I investigated, this is probably the saddest, the most unsettling for me. And seeing her like that,
no,
it doesn't make it easy at all because most of the time people don't who complain, they're either on the phone or they don't show up. And so when you actually see it in person. I just don't want you to think that we're all human, so, you know.
I understand. I appreciate that. I do understand. I understand that there, and I even told Dr. McAllister that, like, it's the practice of medicine. I understand that things, unforeseen things can happen. I don't understand why I had to go to two other surgeons and have them do the x-ray and show me this horrific x-ray and why we didn't do x-rays and find this sooner. And if I hadn't gotten those second opinions, you know, would that have been addressed, or would I have just gone into another surgery with Dr. McAllister and had a whole different outcome in recovery than expected?
What was your impetus from having the surgery on the 6th and then going to see doctor on the 11th? Were you having pain then? What was that?
I had pain, but I think pain was to be expected.
Well, supposed to, yes, of course.
But visibly, the foot didn't look right to me. And Dr. Lee did call me post-op, and he told me that I called him first, and I said, 3 days after my surgery, and I said, I have concerns about my foot. I feel like the toes looked twisted. It just didn't look, I don't know how to medically say that, it just didn't look right. And so he said he would have me come in the next morning for an x-ray, and he did. And after x-raying it, he said it looked good. And I left, and not with a great feeling, but I left. And then he called me that evening and said, you know, I reviewed your x-rays again, and I'm not happy with the way that the foot looks, and I'm going to need you to come in for a revision tomorrow morning. And I actually called him the next morning and said that I didn't want to, you know, I think my warning was, with, you know, all due respect, doctor, you know, I think somebody else should fix this mistake. And so I started seeking outside opinions, and Dr. McAllister was recommended to me. And so that's why, you know, I went to Dr. McAllister a few days post-op.
Now, were you having pain right over the surgical area when you saw Dr. McAllister in April of 23?
I had pain in my whole foot.
Okay.
Specifically, though, where I was noticing the most pain and you could visibly see a change in the foot was, like, on the bottom of the foot where the metatarsal bones were. They had, like, almost, I didn't know this at the time, but, like, collapsed. So it looked like a gigantic mass on the bottom of my foot.
Right, because that's probably where I would have focused at, because, you know, most people would have, it hurts, you know, right over the surgical site. That's, you know, when I'm looking, I know we get telescoped in sometimes with going into the area that's swollen.
Yeah. And that's why when I went to the Core Institute, I took my shoe off and I showed him my foot. He said we need to get an x-ray before we discuss anything.
You know, I think we're all in agreement there were no violations of state statutes. I think that Dr. McAllister is aware that timing should have, you know, and other exams should have been done to pick it up sooner. But the way these things go, I don't know how much of a difference that would have made in the outcome, which is what's so frustrating there, is like here we have this, you know, healthy young woman who went into this with, you know, high hopes of things being good, and now here she's still dealing with the situation. So I will have to make the motion that this case should be dismissed because there are no violations of state statutes according to our statutes, but I think Dr. McAllister took on a big job, and maybe there, you know, these things, we've seen them snowball like this before, that the problem was before and not what Dr. McAllister did. And then, unfortunately, this young woman has had to suffer through all this, and I feel just brokenhearted, actually. But that's my motion.
I second the
motion. I second it.
Any other discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
So moved. Motion carried.
Want to take 5 minutes?
Yeah, I do.
Hi, this is Heather in the board office. For those participants on the phone, we are going to take just a brief recess, about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Second.
Any discussion on that motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Do you want to, Dr. Campbell, just list the allegations?
Oh, yeah,
right
I was
now
gonna, can
motion?
I do that in discussion? In discussion?
I would do it, I would make it as part of your motion.
Oh, okay, so since we haven't voted on the motion, I'm going to kind of admit it then. Okay, so I'll make a motion that the board would open a complaint against Dr. David K. Lee in regard to the information presented in complaint 23-08-C at the board meeting of November the 8th, 2023. The board is concerned with the following. Failure to perform the most appropriate surgery to address the patient's podiatric complaint. And first informing the patient things were okay, and then indicating a revision was needed.
the investigator.
Okay, and do I need, and then I also thought a possible Liz Frank's injury?
Yeah.
That's kind of secondary.
Yeah,
but those first ones, does that sound?
The shortening was, yeah.
Clear?
Seconded.
Okay, moved and seconded about opening a board complaint against Dr. David K. Lee. Any other discussion? Dr. Yolani, you have anything you want to add to anything?
No, that's fine.
Okay. No further discussion, so let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Yeah, I thought that was appropriate after everything this morning that we found. All righty. Okay, let's go back to minutes. Number four, we've got general session of October 11, 2023. Does anybody have any concerns or additions, corrections on those minutes?
Not that I saw.
Okay, and Heather had sent in the other email about the corrections that were made. So anyway, hearing no additions or corrections for the general session meeting minutes of 10-11-23, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Next is we have two executive sessions from that day, October 11th. The first session was from 8:55 a.m. to 9:03 a.m. And again, there was a correction that Mr. Rose was not present, but was Dr. Foreman present. So that's all been taken care of. Anybody have any questions or concerns or additions or corrections? Hearing none, we'll take a vote on that. All in favor of the
aye.
The first executive session
aye.
Is aye. Okay, opposed, so moved. Then the second session on same date was 10:07 to 10:18 a.m. Any additions or corrections? Okay, hearing none, we'll take a vote on those minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay, done those. The next under is our license issuances, which is 5B. We have one, Dr. Bill Harries, that's applying via Comedy. Everything is complete in his application. Does anyone have any questions or concerns about Dr. Harries? Okay, hearing none, then we will vote on the motion to accept Dr. Harries' application via Comedy. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Alrighty. And next is Heather and I, this is number six. Heather and I attended the Federation of Podiatric Medical Boards meeting on the 26th of October. And I'll just give a little rundown on what was discussed at that meeting. It was pretty well attended. It was with the member boards. Mostly what was dealt with is we had some, there was a short presentation from CPME, Heather Stagliano, that's the executive director, and John Marco, which is he's the DPM, that's the chair. Anyway, they just discussed what functions that CPME does. Then we had updates from stuff with the VA, from APMA, and from National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners. One of the things is the testing company switched from Prometric to now called to Measure Learning, and that will take place over the next year. Prometric is still doing some of the testing for this year, and then the Measure will form in 24. The other thing is the CSPE exam is still in progress as to what's going on there. The CSPE committee asked the schools to submit materials regarding how they test the students on these communication skills and documentation skills, etc. So they're going to try to take that information and see if they can get a have something standardized so that the testing on that skill can be done at the school, the schools, and then affirmed or attested by the deans of the schools. There was a short report on the Podiatry Compact Task Force that's currently they formed a task force, they've drafted a compact, and so they'll, as information comes out as to how that is going along, they're modeling it after the Federation of State, or after the MDDO compacts. Just more, the member boards helped Florida regarding information regarding universal recognition. The board will have two vacancies as people are terming out. So there, you know, any people who are interested in participating, you know, on the board can make application. And we had our member topic conversations where we talked about discipline, like what state's procedures are for investigations and procedures that are done. We talked about license portability. Board compositions, single board versus multi-specialty board, multi-boards, like some states like Ohio, they're all together, DOs, MDs, podiatrists, etc. So some states pushing for that, some states not. And then we had a discussion on rulemaking and how rulemaking is done. And anything else to add, Heather?
No, I think you did a very thorough job.
All right, so let's move on. If anybody have any questions on that? Okay. Heather's Executive Director's Report is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. The board may recall that at its April 12th meeting, it issued a non-disciplinary order to Dr. Hugh Hall in resolution of complaint number 2222. Dr. Hall completed the requirements for that order, and in consultation with the board chair, he was released from the terms of the non-disciplinary order on October 12th, 2023. An update on the rules: at its October 11th meeting, the board did vote to increase the annual license renewal fee as of the justification to the governor's office on October 16th and on October 17th. I got the approval to move forward with the rulemaking process. So the initial docket opening and notice of proposed rulemaking was sent to the Secretary of State's office on October 18th. Since I've sent board materials, I have received the stamped agency receipt from the Secretary of State's office, just stating that they did receive the documents. So I believe, and I have not received official notification of this yet, but according to their calendar, the rules should be posted in the Secretary of State's register on November 10th, although that is an observed holiday, so maybe they'll be posted tomorrow. And then if that is the case, then that record will close on December 11th, and then I'll send the final approval request to the governor's office, and my goal is to try to get these effective before the May 2023 renewal. So then after that, then it has to go to the governor's regulatory review council. It'll be posted again in the register before they can become effective. I do have a quick update on fingerprint clearance cards. There's not a lot of new information since the board's October meeting, but a few executive directors did reach out to the governor's office requesting a meeting with the health policy advisors, a few other individuals, you know, at that office, and that was, early October when we reached out to them, and the governor's office did respond back late Monday afternoon. And so we responded yesterday, and we're still waiting. We're guessing that a meeting will be scheduled at the end of November sometime. So that's the only new information I have on that. And I can answer any questions on those. I did provide a copy of the current budget, and there was one complaint that was submitted yesterday afternoon that's not on the complaint log. And I can answer any questions on those.
Well, we still are nice that our docket is so quiet and short. I can remember years of pages. Okay. I don't have any questions. Do you have any questions, Dr. Ioanna?
No question.
Okay. So next is a summary of current events. I don't have anything for that category. The public nine is gone. We have no one to call or no one to call upon. Anybody have any items that they'd like to see on future meeting agendas?
Well, I don't have an item, but I have a medical assistant going through the radiology class.
Oh, how's that going?
So they just sent her a book. They didn't say what to do with the book. Obviously, she's studying the book. There were no instructions afterwards, so I have to follow up and find out when she's done studying what's the next step, because they did not send anything with it.
Well, this will be interesting for you. Yeah, keep us abreast of how, you know, what her experience is like, because that would be important to know.
We can add something to the December, even January agenda,
just to give
depending
us
on your
okay.
time.
It would be
great.
That would be great. Yeah. Okay.
I have my other one leaving for vacation, so she better catch it by then.
Yeah. Okay, great. And our next meeting is December the 13th, 2023.
Okay.
Yeah, and anybody else have anything?
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, gobble, gobble, gobble. How many calories does it, do you know how, what does they tell you? How many calories is it at an average Thanksgiving meal? I think it's like 4,000.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
I can imagine.
Yeah.
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 Average person gains 10 pounds between Thanksgiving and or until after New Year's.
Not a good thing.
Yep.
Anyway. Okay.
Okay.
Well, if we have no other agenda items, I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting at 10:11 a.m.
Second.
Good, very good. Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And thanks, guys, that was a tough case, and I think we did the right thing. I think we did the right thing. That was so bad.
I felt
bad for her.
In that one.
No winner. You got that right. You got that.